This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Good morning. It is a lovely Saturday in September. Tom Scheuer in studio and one of the regulars back on the program today. And we're going to learn more about alternatives to bankruptcy.
Indeed, Steve. We have Jim Rubenstein joining us again in studio. Jim is, as you've mentioned, a frequent contributor to our program and is also recognized as one of the most distinguished practitioners in the area of bankruptcy law and creditors' remedies in our area. And so welcome back, Jim.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks, Steve. It's good to be here.
And thank you for pulling together the background, the research for this program. I understand there's a new game in town in terms of businesses that have failed and need to be wrapped up in addition to bankruptcy.
That's right. There's been some excitement, at least in my legal community, about two new laws, sets of laws that were passed by the legislature and became effective on August 1st. And they're both alternatives to bankruptcy. One is called a receivership law, and one is called an assignment for the benefit of creditors, and we like to just call them ABCs.
Well, we'll be sure to use the simple terminology here in the program. Jim, we've been doing this program now for a little over 4 years, and of course, during that interval, it's been the time of the Great Recession, and so bankruptcy and business failures, et cetera, have been leading topics during that interval. What's the situation now with bankruptcy court filings? Have they tapered off, still increasing? What's the answer?
Well, bankruptcy court filings, especially business filings, but all filings, have tapered off. The number of cases, new cases, is not growing. They're declining from month to month and year to year very recently. And there are a couple of possibilities as to why this may be.
Right. It wouldn't necessarily reflect that the economy's really turned around a lot.
Not necessarily, but it does reflect some stability in the economy. And I think the worst of the companies that were really impacted by the recession, they've already done it. I think that with banks reluctant to lend and taking less risk on the lending end, it's harder sometimes now for a company to get in trouble by overextending itself. And another thing affected that, I think, is the continuing low and seemingly lowering interest rates would allow companies who are maybe on the borderline to hang on that much longer. And finally, I think more and more states and more banks and other creditors and companies are looking at alternatives to bankruptcy, which these two new statutes do present here in Minnesota.
Now, obviously, one way to solve a failed business situation is to go into bankruptcy, but that comes with a fair amount of baggage, right?
Right. In a bankruptcy, it's a federal law. It's a very comprehensive statute. It's very rigid. It's a very powerful statute in terms of putting everybody in a slot and over time treating them as to what their legal rights are, depending on what slot they're put in based on their legal rights. But it's time-consuming. It can be very expensive. And it basically is an invitation to, if you got any complaint, sue me now. And here's where you can do it. You come into the bankruptcy court and you get involved in a lot of side litigation. And the liquidation process, when liquidation is in order, can take a long time. Trustees are encouraged to kind of chase down every jot and tittle, and they don't distribute anything until the case is very much at the end. And this can take several years from time to time.
Now, those of us who practice in litigation especially have commercial practices, from time to time, we've run into something called a receivership, but principally we've run into those kinds of proceedings in other states, not Minnesota. Why was that?
Well, in Minnesota, receiverships have been around for a long time. but there's been no comprehensive statute that puts it all together. My friend and colleague James Bailey, who headed the committee that wrote and then saw these statutes drafted, says that the Minnesota laws on the statute books contain 299 separate references to receiverships.
Wow.
And really nothing that put it all together as to what they are, what their powers are, and how it all works.
But simply stated, a receivership is a way to for a court-supervised proceeding to take control of assets of a troubled business and administer them fairly for the benefit of creditors.
Yes. The receiver, just depending on how the case is set up and what's involved, the receiver can take custody and supervision of one asset. This often happens in a mortgage foreclosure. If there's an apartment building and the borrower is in default, a receiver gets appointed to take over the apartment building, collect the rents, run it. Or the receiver can take over an entire business, whether it's a real estate business, a shopping center, manufacturing, a computer business, anything like that, and with the same supervisory powers. In the new law, there's a distinction is that I just drew between just taking over one asset and taking over the whole company. The whole company is called a general receivership, and the, just taking over one asset is called a limited receivership.
All right, let's talk about a general receivership just in an overview kind of a way. First of all, Jim, have they been around for quite a while, and do they work?
General receiverships have been around since the 16th century, and they work as well as the receiver and the court supervision that is given. But they generally are a very quick way to get control of assets. If there is questions of fraud, if assets are going out the door, or if just a company is done and the creditor doesn't seem to be cooperating in trying to pay its creditors, you can go into court, get the receiver appointed. And the receiver's job is to run the business, at least keep the lights on, say if the receiver feels it ought to be sold as a going concern, to liquidate the assets. The receiver can sell the property in a general receivership, again, with the court supervision. And one thing that to keep in mind is even though the receiver is usually appointed at the request of the creditors and the creditors get to suggest who the receiver is, once the receiver is appointed, he's subject to supervision by the court and reports to the court and is responsible, beholden to the court, not to the creditor who appointed him or her.
So, Jim, you touched on something there, and that is the ability of the creditors and or the owner of the business that is in trouble to actually have more input over who becomes the receiver than is the case in terms of who gets to be the bankruptcy trustee.
That's right. In bankruptcy, generally speaking, there is a panel of trustees who are qualified and experienced in the area, and they are assigned on a random basis once a case is filed. In a receivership, it's a state court procedure, and ultimately it's up to the state court judge to decide who the receiver is, but very often he or she will accept the recommendation of the creditors, and if there's an agreement between the creditors and the debtor or the company that's the subject, that's the person that often gets appointed.
We have more on the way. Alternatives to bankruptcy in the spotlight on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Burnett. If you have a question about the topic, feel free to call the program 651-989-9226, toll free 1-866-989-9226. Texas Studio 81807, that's 81807. And of course, Minnesota Law will return in a moment.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know Moss & Barnett attorney Clifford A. Tanney Jr. went on to fame while serving during World War II as general counsel to the super-secret nuclear development program of the U.S. Army, known as the Manhattan Project?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss & Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO. You're listening to News Radio 830 from the Buick Studio, WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. Saturday is between 11 and noon. And for more, feel free to go online, Moss and Barnett on WCCO.com. Of course, our host is Tom Scheuer. Tom.
Thank you so much, Steve. We're talking with Jim Rubenstein about the law in Minnesota just adopted in August of a general allowing the state courts to run something called a general receivership. And also receivership around an assignment for the benefit of creditors. And we'll drill down on those topics. But, Jim, first of all, let's go back into your lifeline and talk about the time when you were a receiver, actually in federal court once, and that goes back into the late 70s.
Late 70s and early 80s, I was appointed the receiver for a company called Flight Transportation Corporation, which was supposedly running a business charter and flight school out of the Flying Cloud Airport, and had some vacation charter operations in Grand Cayman Islands.
I remember that case. As I recall, it was much ado about nothing. It had the company ended up having about three airplanes, and yet it was purporting to have this massive, almost industry-leading charter business going.
It was a huge, big lie situation. Investors would come to the headquarters in Flying Cloud Airport, and they would move. They would have a board that showed the flights going on, and they'd just fill in flights on the board, and they'd move the planes from their hangar across the field to some other hangar so that they could say the planes were out flying. And they misdescribed the planes. They said they were bigger planes than they were. And they had just completed a public offering.
And that was a big public offering at that time.
Yes. At the time, they had a public offering of $25 million, which was sitting in New Jersey. And this is when I said before about how quickly you can take control of assets, the federal judge here in Minnesota said, well, and the Securities Exchange Commission had petitioned, and they said, well, you got to get this money into Minnesota under the jurisdiction of the Minnesota court. So that was my first job. And then we had to
– Did that entail a lot of activity to pick up that money out of New Jersey and get it back here?
Well, yeah. It was surprisingly easy, especially when you have a federal court order behind you.
Yeah, how about that?
I found the bank to contact. I told them what it was. I faxed them a copy of the order. We did have faxes in those days, and they sent the money. But it was a challenge to take control of the assets. Fortunately, there were some employees who stayed on to help us operate the company, and I was able to retain a business person. Or one of the creditors that made available a business person who helped advise me on operations, since I am not a pilot and or an airline executive in any way. And we our task was to see what business was there, find out if there was a viable company, try to save the jobs. And after several months, when it became apparent that most of the business was a fiction, I was replaced by someone who was charged with liquidating. But we had the same problem at that time as was in Minnesota before this statute was passed, and that was federal law receivership was also sort of a mishmash of different provisions in different parts of the code, and there was really no comprehensive program or procedure or even statement of the powers of a receiver. There was I remember that there was a treatise on federal receiverships, and I was so excited to get a hold of it, but it hadn't been updated for 7 years, and it was out of print at the time. So that's why a statute like this one in Minnesota seems to be so – would be helpful.
Well, you mentioned something, or part of that story that caught my attention, I should say, was the fact that the receivership was set up in federal court. And I'm wondering, why would a federal court need to set up a receivership? Because right down the hall, they have the U.S. Bankruptcy Court that, as you said at the top of the hour, has even more powers than a receivership.
The federal receiverships, in fact, are more common now as the case has gone. I actually attended a federal receivership hearing in California last week.
Yeah, we'll come back after the break to talk about that. That was quite a day.
And I think when, for example, the Securities Exchange Commission is pursuing fraudulent companies and their owners, they prefer a receivership. And that's kind of how it's been going.
Well, and certainly we have seen just a slew of receiverships in the Ponzi schemes, including
right.
our own Tom Petters case here and the Madoff case, et cetera, et cetera. And so I was just curious as to what the interplay might be between a receivership and a bankruptcy court. But obviously, as you say, the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, prefers receiverships when they're trying to shut down somebody immediately and grab the assets.
I think part of it, too, is a receivership is by a federal district court judge who has control of the case, the fraud case that has been commenced, and can, in addition to the traditional issues that come up in bankruptcy, you have these issues with stock fraud, and they have a broader view of it in that case.
We have more on the way. Jim Rubenstein in studio with Tom Scheuer. Alternatives to bankruptcy. We'll continue the program. By the way, those numbers, if you have a question, feel free to call the program, 651-989-9226, toll free, 1-866-989-9226. Quick weather break and then more Minnesota law coming up on News Radio 830 WCCO.
News Radio 830 WCCO. Always.
It is 11:33, and Minnesota law continues. Tom Scheuer, Jim Rubenstein in studio. Alternatives to bankruptcy, and before the break, you were talking about bankruptcy and receivership. I think receivership, and you see it in the movies where an army of law enforcement and security people come in and padlock and lock everything down and put tape and start taking photographs, and they have clipboards and are taking inventory. Receivership happens very quickly. You get the order and you need to move fast.
That's right. It's usually not that dramatic. We don't have Tommy Lee Jones and a bunch of black Suburbans, but in some cases, like for example, the one we were talking about earlier, flight transportation, the chief officers of the company had been arrested, and the bank record, the company's records had all been taken down to FBI headquarters. So we didn't get a lot of resistance to changing the locks and getting control of the airplanes, and. Walking in and taking over.
And, of course, if you had, then you would have sent – if you had encountered resistance, you would have sent Tommy Lee Jones in a black Suburban out there. So and of course, we shouldn't, I suppose, give the impression that receivership is just always a streamlined cuts right to the bone, get it over quickly kind of proceeding. In fact, you had quite an experience just this week with a federal court receivership hearing out in Los Angeles that you attended.
Yes, this is a case of some, again, some kind of fraud in the sale of notes in the medical field, generally speaking.
Yeah, it was a Ponzi scheme.
And we had a couple of hearings, and it was just an all-day marathon. We went before a judge, and
what time did you start?
We started at 8:30 a.m., and we didn't get out of there till 8 p.m., and it just was a And we didn't finish because there were so many issues. Of course, the judge had a lot of other issues on his plate to deal with that day. And in a sense, it was a positive thing that he stuck with it long enough, at least as far as it got. But even at the end of the day, the issues were so complex and there were so many parties wanting to be heard about various things. And the judge was working so hard to get people to actually talk to one another. That it took a long time, and some of those people have to go back again to make so that everything can be heard.
Well, again, when we started the program here this morning, you mentioned that bankruptcy seems a bit straitjacketed compared to receivership. But I suppose, on the other hand, you might make the argument that, well, okay, a receivership is more freewheeling. On the other hand, might it not get bogged down more in interminable sorts of procedures and proceedings like you encountered out in Los Angeles this week?
Well, both of them can get bogged down in that way. That's certainly not necessarily an advantage of a receivership over a bankruptcy, because depending on what the issues are and who the lawyers are and who the judge is and what his or her approach is, you can get very bogged down. And when people get their day in court and want to have a hearing, I mean, that's always a situation. One thing about receiverships is that they don't trump bankruptcy. And in a sense, it requires the active or at least willing cooperation of the creditors that the receivership go forward, because a company in receivership can be put into bankruptcy.
You brought up the example of this flight business that went bad.
Yes.
You said that you went in with the goal of seeing if there was a business worth saving. Is that always the goal in receivership or bankruptcy, to take a look at, hey, if we can save this business, if we can save the jobs and hopefully get creditors more money, is that always the goal up front when you take a look at any situation, instead of just, well, we're going to liquidate and do the best we can? I mean, up front, do you try and say, is there a business worth saving?
It varies very much from what situation you have. So, sometimes the business is already closed up,
sure,
and it's just a question of cleaning up. Sometimes it is that. Is the business worth saving? And in that situation, in a bankruptcy, you're often in a Chapter 11, which is a pretty good tool for finding that out. That's where the management stays in charge of the company, or you can get a trustee to try to operate the company in an 11. But I think, by and large, a general receivership wouldn't come about unless the company was pretty close to the end of its rope already.
You know, there are a couple of examples that come to mind, Tom and Jim, in the Petters Ponzi. Sun Country Airlines and Polaroid were under the Petters umbrella, but they were skillfully separated out. Those businesses were saved and, to the best of my knowledge, doing very well today, in spite of the criminal activity behind the scenes.
And in fact, I might interject, Jim represented the receivership or the bankruptcy in connection with the aircraft sale. Isn't that correct?
That whole case is an interesting example of the interplay of a receivership and bankruptcy. There were lots of businesses in the Petters umbrella which were just dead ducks by the time a receiver got appointed. But the airline division was not. It was Sun Country was operating. It was struggling. And so the receiver made the decision to put that whole airline division into Chapter 11. And that way he was able to get the bankruptcy for at least that piece of the case. And that was successfully reorganized. I represented the holding company that owned the operating airline. A different attorney at a different law firm represented the airline itself. But that was able to turn around. We actually, the holding company loaned in, who was in bankruptcy itself, made a loan to the operating company, which was also in bankruptcy, which is very unusual for one company in bankruptcy to make a loan to another, which was partly is what helped, and there were other factors as well, the Sun Country to revitalize and got sold to third parties as a going concern and saved all those jobs. So Polaroid, on the other hand, was the asset there was more the brand and the potential of that brand. Polaroid was one of the most respected brands in the world, and that value was preserved by also putting it through bankruptcy, rather than having it stay within the receivership.
We have more on the way. Jim Rubenstein, Tom Schroer, Alternatives to Bankruptcy. It is 11:40. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know a team of Moss and Barnett attorneys worked on the appeal of the case that served as the basis for the motion picture, North Country?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
When you need to know, it's News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. Tom Scheuer hosting Jim Rubenstein, Alternatives to Bankruptcy. Gentlemen.
Jim, one of the points that we wanted to drive home here is, and you mentioned it earlier, is that these new state laws, the receivership, general receivership law, and the assignment for the benefit of creditors, which we're also going to talk about here in a minute. But in the meantime, these are not state laws that overcome or preempt in any way a federal bankruptcy law, and there's some challenges with that, right?
Yes, there are. Federal bankruptcy law is there because the U.S. Constitution gives Congress the power to make uniform laws regarding bankruptcy. And this statute, according to the materials that accompany it when it was presented to the legislature, is kind of narrowly designed so that it really doesn't step on the toes of the federal bankruptcy law. A couple of examples of this are that, as I mentioned earlier, it doesn't preempt bankruptcy. Creditors who disagree with the procedure can file an involuntary bankruptcy case, or a receiver in his or her discretion can put the company into bankruptcy. Secondly, it's not as powerful as the bankruptcy code. And that's, I know that's kind of a vague word, but let me give you a couple of examples. One is, in bankruptcy, there is a automatic stay that just by filing the case, you freeze any litigation against the company. Creditors are prohibited from seizing assets, with or without litigation, from filing liens, anything like that. There is a but in a state court receivership in Minnesota, there's a very limited stay for 30 days, and it really more is just a reflection of the fact that the property is now in effect in the custody of the court. Custodia legis is the phrase we use, and therefore has some protection because of that. Another example is there are certain powers that a bankruptcy trustee has to recover preferences, which are payments made to creditors within 90 days of the filing, and the Minnesota law doesn't have those preference powers. It's all part of this attempt to narrowly draw it, to make it not as big a deal as a bankruptcy in the hopes that it would be more efficient. Of course, everything I'm saying we'll find out really how it works, because it's a new law and there hasn't been that much use made of it yet, but we'll have to wait and see how it actually fleshes out in practice.
Right. You mentioned earlier on that one of the advantages of the new state court receivership law is that it allows the business owner to have more control, seemingly at least, in the planning stage over what happens in the receivership. What if I'm on the short end of the stick as a creditor? I'm not getting the benefit of the receivership that I'd like. Do I have the right then to push the case into bankruptcy?
Well, yes. Under bankruptcy law, in most cases of an operating business, it takes three creditors who have relatively undisputed claims, and that the total amount of those three claims has to be in the neighborhood of $12,000 to $15,000. That number changes with inflation every few years. And if they put a petition in bankruptcy, file an involuntary petition, then a bankruptcy case commences.
So it would seem to me that really the tail can wag the dog in a receivership if any three creditors with a relatively puny total amount of claims between them that you mentioned of up to $15,000 can force the issue into bankruptcy court. They could have a lot of power in a receivership.
They could, but there's a temperance. There's a way that power is tempered actually by the bankruptcy code, which recognizes that there's a doctrine of abstention. And if it recognizes that if there's a some kind of workout or a receivership proceeding that's going smoothly, just the mere filing of the petition by three disgruntled creditors wouldn't automatically put the full force of a bankruptcy proceeding behind. The company and other creditors have a chance to contest and say, wait a minute, this is just a few disgruntled creditors. Most of the creditors are happy with this going. We think you, the bankruptcy judge, should abstain from implementing this case while this state court receivership goes ahead and not just listen to these three disgruntled creditors. And then the disgruntled creditors get to find more allies or, you know, but it's, the bankruptcy court at least has the power to decide we're going to let the receivership go forward and not have a bankruptcy take over.
We have more on the way, a final segment of the program coming up. Today, Alternatives to Bankruptcy, Tom Schreier hosting Jim Rubenstein here on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Listen to WCCO on FM at 1029 KMNB HD2, Minneapolis, St. Paul. And while you're there, check out the nonstop Buzzin' Country. Just one click away. Buzzin' at 1029.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, Alternatives to Bankruptcy. Tom Schreier hosting Jim Rubenstein.
Yes, as we've been talking about, Minnesota state law changed here in August with the enactment of two statutes, one on general receivership and the other on something called an assignment for the benefit of creditors. Jim, what's the difference?
Not too much. An assignment for the benefit of creditors is a procedure where the company itself that's ready to go out of business picks a person to assign all those companies' assets and liabilities to, in effect. That person then takes custody of the assets and is responsible for administering those just as a receiver would. I like to call a procedure in ABC because it's easier to say than assignment for the benefit of creditors. And I like to call the person who is in charge a receiver because it's a lot easier than saying an assignee for the benefit of the creditors, which is the formal name of this person. But once that assignment is made, according to the new laws, I'll say that assignee has the same powers and duties of a receiver. We've talked a lot about the receiver's powers and duties in terms of collecting assets and pursuing claims, but the receiver's duties also include finding a way to distribute those assets to the creditors and keeping track of claims, and they're contesting claims, so that's a whole orderly procedure in that sense. And one other thing I want to point out is that you don't have to file anything to go out of business necessarily. Many businesses close, shockingly, even without hiring a lawyer to do so. But there are also even more informal ways to do it that maybe are the topic of another program. But that can be done as well.
So if you have to look into a crystal ball and gaze out into the future, how important, how impactful do you think these new statutes will be in terms of the bankruptcy practice, going out of business practice among lawyers in Minnesota? We only have a minute left here.
I think that once people see that it works, and if it does work on a few test cases that may be coming down the road, it will be commonly used for liquidations that are have some problems but are not overly contentious, you know, where there may be difficulty locating assets or things of that sort.
All right, we've got to put a wrap on the program. Always a pleasure to see Jim Rubenstein, Tom Schreier, Alternatives to Bankruptcy on the program today. For more, feel free to go online, Moss and Barnett on WCCO.com. Next week, Tom, what have we got?
We'll be talking about the mediation process with Brian Short here in Minnesota.
All right, that is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, here on News Radio 830 WCCO.